This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Oh, what a tangled web we weave. And did we first practice to deceive intentionally or not? Well, perhaps that's one of the main questions that we're trying to get at, if there is any truth to be found in these recent podcasts that have centered on magic thievery and entitlement. This podcast is brought to you by ManageGigs.com. If you manage your gigs using a spreadsheet or other type of software program, you might consider doing it online by using ManageGigs.com. You can find out more information and get a 7-day free trial by clicking on the banner at the bottom of this blog here on the MagicWordPodcast.com. This podcast features John Lovick, who was one of the people called out by Gregory Wilson in an earlier podcast. Specifically, Greg had said that John was a, quote, piece of work, and apparently has presented lies, I believe stemming back from the original review of Greg's DVD set, in which John Lovick had said that there was not adequate crediting for many of the effects that were presented on that DVD. At the time, Greg had the opportunity to, quote, come clean and go out and adequately say he was sorry, and yes, this is who should have been credited, or these are the people who should have been credited, or to have remained silent and made it appear as if that these were ideas of his own. And apparently he had taken the latter road rather than the former, at least according to John Lovick as presented here on this podcast. There were several people who had come to me to say that they would like to also give their particular stories about Greg Wilson, and Greg has told me to go ahead and to list as many people as possible who would like to come on and present their side of the story as to their accusations and any proof that they have that Greg has taken anything from them or anyone else, and that he deserves that title of being a thief of magic. Greg has said to me also, since his original podcast, that he hasn't had a chance to listen to any of these podcasts, but he has had others who have contacted him and told him about this series that is going on, and had requested that he comes back and gives his final side of the story after all of these have aired. And I'm going to give him that opportunity, certainly, to have the final word, since that he was the one who brought this all up initially, but only after he's had an opportunity to listen to all the podcasts. Not only is John Lovick on this podcast, after the recording we made with John, I also reached out to Seth Kramer, who is another one listed by Gregory on his podcast, giving his testimony and chronology of events. And so now, welcome my guest on this podcast, John Lovick, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I have with me as my guest Mr. John Lovick from Los Angeles, California. Hi there, handsome Jack. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
I'm glad that you had agreed to come on and chat about this, because you had been called out, so to speak, I guess, when Gregory had mentioned your name and said, yeah, I got a problem with that guy too, you know. And I thought, well, it's probably best that you address that situation then yourself.
Yes. I mean, you know, this is something that I'm hesitant to go public with, but, you know, he did sort of attack my character and my integrity and, you know, said things that, you know, weren't true and, you know, half true. And so I do kind of feel the need to address the things he said and the issues that he raised.
Sure, and I appreciate that. I know there were several other people also that he had mentioned, and basically he was saying that he had been accused of being a theft of intellectual property or other people's tricks that they had shared with him, and then he had gone out and marketed it or whatever. But I think as it related then to you, John, was he said something about that you had published something or about to publish a review of a DVD, I believe, of his, and were kind of apologetic, I guess, beforehand, but and he thought that it believed that you were going to make some changes after that conversation, but you didn't. And so I think he was essentially calling you a liar.
No, that's not right. That's not what he said on your podcast, okay. And that's also not what happened. That's not what happened. And he didn't say that's what happened.
Okay.
Here's what happened. Greg's problem with me, you know, stems from 10, 11 years ago when I wrote a review of his DVD, and Greg and I were friends, and he put out this three-disc DVD, DVD set with L&L Publishing, and I wrote a review of it. I thought it was there were some problems with it, and you know what? And I'm going to give you the review. So you can have it on your website and people can download it and read it. And I also give you the longer first draft that was too long for the magazine because I go into some more detail in the longer review. But I didn't have room for that in the magazine. So
sometimes that a reviewer would like to spend more time. I know like Jamie and Swiss will say, sure. If there's something that I don't like, I feel like I have to defend my position as to why I don't like it. Everybody likes everything, it seems like. But if you don't like it, you have to explain why specifically you don't like it. And you do need to go in a little bit more detail.
Exactly. And that's why I wish we could have run the longer review, but sure. But we couldn't. But I would like people to see it because right. I do go into more detail. So I wrote this review, and I thought there were problems with the DVD. There's good stuff on it. He has some good tricks, and the tricks that were good, I said they were good. The stuff that I think, you know, people would have fun performing, I said, you know, this is a, you know, good, solid routine. You have fun performing it. But I you know... I had some problems with it, and the biggest issue was he really dropped the ball with a lot of the crediting. And I did something I've never done with any other review I've ever written, and I've been reviewing stuff for that was about when I started reviewing, so that was about 10 years ago. And I've reviewed stuff for both Magic Magazine and Genie Magazine, and in the 10 years I've been reviewing, I've never once done this. Is I called him beforehand. To A, warn him he wouldn't like the review, and also give him a chance to redeem himself, because there were 10 or 12, I don't know the exact number, but we'll go through them here, 10 or 12 things where items that weren't him, where he either just absolutely didn't credit or got the credit wrong, or the way he credited it was really, really problematic. And I wanted to give him a chance to say, oh, you know what, you're right, I screwed up. Or explain why he screwed up, or you know, explain why they dropped the ball. You wanted to give him a chance to do that, and that's when the spinning began. And the thing about Gregory that you know you maybe find out, but you know people have encountered, is that his story is constantly changing, and he'll try one tactic and one defense, and you shoot that down. He'll try another one, and his story is constantly changing. He's rewriting history, and that began that day with that first conversation where he spun and he denied, and you know he didn't fess up to anything, and he didn't own up to he did anything wrong, and there were no mistakes, and I'm like, okay. And so the review ran, and you know Gregory has hated me ever since.
But when you talk about the redemption, and he was going to try to redeem himself, once the DVD is done and in the box, and L&L's got them out and marketing them, you really can't go back and reshoot something and re-edit.
No, you can't. But here's what I said to him. He was upset. You know, understandably so. You get a bad review, that hurts. Mm-hmm. But also, if you point out things you've done that make you look bad. He was upset and said, Greg, you think this is a horrible thing, and I can understand that. And I said, but here's the thing. This is going to be hard to believe, but this could be the best, not the best thing, but one of the best things that ever happened to you or your reputation. And I'll tell you why, and I'll tell you how you handle this. This can be either your Watergate moment or your Checkers speech moment. What you need to do now is you need to go public in however you want to do it. If you want to, you know, take out Nathan Magazine, or more likely go on, you know, the magic bulletin boards or the chat rooms or whatever. But in a very, very public way, you go on and you say, you know what? I dropped the ball. It's been pointed out that I was sloppy with the crediting and I made some mistakes, and I should have credited some people and I didn't. And here's where I dropped the ball. I should have credited this person, this person, this person, this person. And I didn't. I meant to, you know, either I meant to and I forgot to, or I didn't know, or I overlooked it, whatever. And I say, and I apologize now. want to make it clear that these are things that should have been acknowledged and I didn't. If you do that, that will do so much to rehabilitate your reputation. Because even at that time, he already had a not great reputation in the world of magic.
Because you're talking about 10 years ago, again, about 2005. And again, what he was talking about, this goes back to 2001, as I recall the date that Greg had mentioned. So again, as you said, there would have been at least 4 years or so before that predates that review that he would have had that, quote, reputation.
Yeah, I'm not sure of what happened in 2001 you're talking about. But I do know at this time he did, you know, there were some problems. Well, some of the problems with Apollo preceded this, I think. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so maybe that's the...
That is what he's referring to, I believe.
So he had, you know, his reputation, you know, took some hits. I said, Greg, this will do so much to rehabilitate your reputation. You know, people can't, you know, won't be able to, you know, jump on you. For doing this. And I really thought he would see the wisdom in this. I really, really thought he'd say, you know what? I did screw up. I should have credited these things and I didn't. And so at the time, these were just crediting issues. These were, you know, it was a problem, but it wasn't a horrible problem, and crediting issues happen.
And he recognized that he should have credited, or they were not his own ideas, or he just didn't fess up to that even.
He didn't fess up that. And like I said, his story changed literally daily because we spoke back and forth for, and I'm going to go through these because right now, this is sort of a he said kind of a thing. And Gregory said, no one has any evidence. No one has any evidence. And Greg said, people got to come to me for the evidence. And you'll notice in the podcast, he never offered any evidence. Everything he said was a my word against his word.
Right. The burden of proof is on his accusers.
Yeah, there's nothing that Gregory offered that could be counted as evidence. There's only his side of the story. And he said nobody's ever been able to, you know, offer any evidence. And his story changed. And we talked back and forth for a week, and his story changed every day. And over the years, it has changed. And I'll tell you how it's changed. Well, my story has remained exactly the same for 11 years. And I can prove it's remained the same for 11 years because I put my story in print. Mm-hmm. And my story is in print in the August 2005 Magic Magazine. So if anybody wants to look up the August 2005 Magic Magazine, they can read the review that I will also send to you. People can download it from your website. So you can see that was my story 11 years ago as my story now. And we will go through these issues, you know, one at a time. But what has happened since then, like I was saying, these were just crediting issues, and crediting issues are a problem. They're certainly a problem, but you can, you know, make up for that. You can make amends. You can, you know, take steps to, you know, rectify it. Or for 10 years, you can ignore it and deny it and try and spin it. And over 10 years, the ignoring it and denying and, you know, trying to spin it and, you know, changing your story, well, then it becomes something more than just a crediting issue. 10 years ago, it was just a crediting issue. Now it becomes something more that you know, borders on theft. I wouldn't have said then that he stole these things. Well, when you put something in print and you don't credit a person, that's a way of claiming it. And when someone points it out that it's not yours, you can say, oh, you're right, it's not mine, my bad. But then for 10 years, if you are claiming it by not pointing out that you didn't offer this credit,
right,
well, that kind of – it kind of now arises to the level of something very akin to theft, you know?
Right.
So, yes. So and I will tell you, I'm debating whether – what order to, you know, offer this information. All right. I'll launch into this now. And so let me get the I've got the dates here so I can tell you what.
Yeah, helps, I think, to have the chronology of that as well.
Yeah. So the review was August 2005, about 3 years ago. Okay, this was in July of 2012. In July of 2012, I got a call out of the blue from Gregory, and he says, would you meet me? And I was like, absolutely, be happy to meet you. And I had no idea what I was in store for. Mm-hmm. And so I met him.
Personally, I mean, you got together. I mean, not just over the phone.
We met at a Starbucks.
Okay.
So we met at a Starbucks. I said, hey, Greg, what's up? He said, you're a liar. I said, all right, what did I lie about?
Good to see you too.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, that's exactly. I might have probably said that. Oh, good to see you too. But you're a liar. I said, all right, what did I lie about? Because you lied about me in your review. I said, all right, what did I lie about? And he couldn't name a single thing that I lied about. He couldn't tell me a single thing that I lied about. And he finally came up with, I said one routine. The entire routine was Arthur Buckley's. And I said, I didn't say the entire routine was Arthur Buckley's. I said the last phase was. He says, no, you said the entire routine was Arthur Buckley's. I said, Greg, I didn't say that. He goes, you did. You said the entire routine. And so when I got home, I emailed him the review. I said, here's what I said verbatim. I said, the last phase is Arthur Buckley's, and you didn't credit him. So next time you call me a liar, you know, do your research a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And I said, while we're at it, here are the other crediting problems that were in that review. Because we talked about it. He said there was one crediting problem on the DVDs. And I said, one, you read the review. There were, you know, 10 or 12. You read the review. There were 10 or 12 problems. He goes, one. He goes, I forgot the credit on one thing. And so in this email, I sent him the review, and I excerpted from the review also as a list. These were the 12 issues. He never responded. Never, never responded. Then, about a year and a half ago, this would have been at Larry Wilson's summit. He calls it, I think, the Thin Air Summit.
Thin Air Summit out in Reno.
Yeah. So I ran into him at the Thin Air Summit. And, you know, I talked to him. I won't go into the whole discussion, but one thing he said is like, you know, all the lies you said in your review, and I said,
so he's still bringing that up like 10 years later.
Yeah, I said, what lies did I say in the review, Greg? And I said, do me a favor. I said, please do me a favor, because if I was wrong about anything, whether it's a lie or a mistake or an error on my part, I absolutely want to clear the record. I will go public. Okay. I'm going to back up to this meeting at the Starbucks, you know, a year before this or 2 years before this. Mm-hmm. This whole, you're a liar. And, you lied in my review. And I said, what did I lie? And he couldn't come up with anything. So the reason why he wanted to meet me then, and I said I wouldn't tell anybody about this for 2 years, and it's been more than 2 years. The reason why he wanted to meet me is he said, I'm going to take a lie detector test, and I want you to sit on the lie detector test. And if I pass the lie detector test, you know, you write about it in for one of the Magic magazines.
Wow.
And so I know Greg, I know the way his mind works, and what I'm convinced of, and I don't know for this is sure, but knowing him and knowing the way his brain works, I'm positive this is what happened. Is he saw some YouTube video about how to beat a lie detector test. You know, there are ways to do it. You put a thumbtack in your shoe, or right. you scrunch up your sphincter really hard, you know, and you can beat a lie detector test. And I'm 100%, but I would be willing to bet Greg Reed, you know, watch these DVDs or, you know, YouTube videos about how to beat a lie detector test. And so he's like, this is what I'll do. I'll take a lie detector test. Maybe that's not the truth, but I bet that is. But he says, I'll take a lie detector test. And if I pass it, you write about it. I'm like, okay. And he goes, here's the deal. You have to take a lie detector test too. I'm like, what am I going to take a lie detector test about? And he goes, the lies you wrote in my review. I'm like, the lies I wrote. And that's when I said, what lies did I write about in your review?
Yeah, be specific.
And that's when he couldn't name a single lie. And he came up with one, which is something I didn't even say. That's when I said, what lies did I say? Because he said, you take a lie detector test about the lies you wrote. I'm like, what lies did I write? I didn't write any lies.
They wouldn't know which questions to ask specifically. Did you lie about A, B, and C when he doesn't say what A, B, and C is?
So about 2 years later, that was in July 2012. 2 years later, and this was at the Thin Air Summit, the first in October 2014, we were having a conversation. I said, and he said, once again said, the lies you said in your review. I said, do me a favor, and I will go public with this. I absolutely will go absolutely public with anything you point out that is mildly, mildly inaccurate. Send me a list. Please, please, please send me a list of every lie I said or every inaccuracy or everything where I was a little bit wrong, or please send me that list.
Sure.
And he said he would. And
that was, again, in your face-to-face meeting where he had accused you and you said, send it to me. I want that in writing.
Yeah. And so then I emailed him again in November, and I said, Gregory, looking forward to getting that from you. And after this conversation in October, I emailed him the review. I said, for your convenience, here's the review. Go through it. Mm-hmm. Didn't hear back from him. I emailed him in November. I said, looking forward to the list of lies. Didn't hear back from him. I emailed him on December 23rd, 2014. Gregory, just wondering, you know, like to hear from you. Didn't hear back from him. I emailed him February 1st, 2015. Gregory, still, you know, still waiting for that list. And he, then I saw him on February 6th. So by this point, I had I'd sent him four emails asking for this and one in-face conversation asking for it. Mm-hmm. And I saw him in February 2006. And I said, Gregory, are you getting my emails? He said, yes, I'm getting your emails. I'm very busy, very, very busy. I said, okay, all right, I understand you're busy. When you get around to it, will you send me that list of all the lies I've had? And he's like, absolutely, I'm looking forward to telling you what liar you are. I said, I'm looking forward to it too. Please send me that list when you can. In May, on May 5th, 2015, I emailed him again. I said, looking forward to that review. And I said, I know you're busy. So how about we do this? How about we do it one paragraph at a time? I said, here's the first paragraph and point out the lies in this paragraph. When you get time, you know, and when you do this paragraph, I'll send you the next paragraph. And you go through that paragraph and point out the lies in that paragraph.
Just like eating an elephant, just one bite at a time.
Exactly. Exactly. I understand going through this review, it's 1,000 words. It's 1,000 words. So it's about, you know, 2 pages on a Word document. It's 1,000 words. Let's go through it a paragraph at a time. That way, you know, you can do one paragraph a week, whatever, and eventually we'll get this done. Never heard back from him. Emailed him on June 8th. Never heard back from him. So I've been begging for 2 years now for him to point out the lies that I said in this review, and he hasn't been able to, hasn't responded.
And here we are in 2016, and still no reply.
Still no reply. So let's get to and one of the things he said is like no one's been able to point out a single thing. No one's been able to point out a single thing. Come to me for evidence. Well, he didn't have any evidence. So let's go through what I said. And here's what I'd like any listeners who care to, and I hope many people would do this. I mean, I don't know how many people would, but I hope many people would. And I hope Greg is listening, because one of the things he said, break it down, talk to me like a 6-year-old and explain to me. Mm-hmm. So I hope Greg is listening. I'm going to keep this very simple, and everything I say now can be verified. You can go to Gregory's DVDs, you can watch it, and you can see that every single factual statement I make in that review is true. Because one of the things Gregory said is my review on your podcast, he said the review was deeply dishonest, I believe was his phrase. He might have phrased it slightly differently, but I'm pretty sure he said it was a deeply dishonest review. Well, every single factual statement I make is absolutely true. If I say he did this on the DVD, he did it on the DVD. Mm-hmm. If I say he didn't do it on the DVD, he didn't do it on the DVD. If I quote him, this is what Gregory said, it is what Gregory said. Anybody who cares to can go to the DVD and see that every single factual statement I say is true. And then when I will offer, you know, sources about where these things really come from, people can go, anybody who cares to, and I hope people care to. I hope Gregor does, because he said on your podcast, I really care about the truth. I really care about the truth. Well, I'm going to lay out the truth here, and Gregory, you can research it. Don't take my word for it. Research it, you know. And so I will go through one item at a time, and, you know, you can go through truthfully and see that every factual statement I say on this DVD is true. And every opinion I say is reasonable. You might not agree with every opinion. I might say I liked a trick, and you might not like a trick, but you can see I'm not outrageously
wrong. It's subjective.
It is subjective. But everything I say opinion-wise, you can't really go – because Gregory has accused me of having an agenda. Mm-hmm. That obviously I had an agenda. Well, if you go through this one trick at a time and you go, I like this trick, I didn't like this trick, any reasonable person can go, that's an absolutely valid opinion. There were no great tricks that I said were terrible. There are no terrible tricks I said were great, you know. Because, you know, Gregory says I had an agenda, it was a character assassination. And the last thing I'm going to say before we get into it, one item at a time, is every single word I said in this review, every single word is about what's on those DVDs. None of this is about Gregory. None of it is about his character. None of it is about his reputation. None of it is about his morality. None of it is about, you know, his personality. None of it's about other things he's done. Mm-hmm. It's not about other products that he put out. It's not about other things I've seen him do, other actions he's had. Every single word is about these DVDs.
That's why they're focused on this only, right?
Yeah, it's not about you. None of this is about you. It's about these DVDs, which in my opinion are a flawed product, you know. So let's go through one at a time. And this is the, you know, I'm explaining it to him, sure, like he's a six-year-old, and this can all be verified. And if I'm wrong about anything, if I say anything here that is not true, let us know. Email, what is your email address?
Yeah, Scott at themagicwordpodcast.com, or they can always make comments on the blog at themagicwordpodcast.com. There's room down there to place your comments if you want to put something, in fact, as Greg listens to this, that he can sign on to that easily and have a rebuttal right there. So it's in writing right there then too. And if he wants to post his response, that is the lies that you've said, that would be a good place for everybody to see this as well.
Yeah. The lies that I've been begging for 2 years.
2 years, right.
So anybody who can point out that I'm wrong about anything, please do go to these, you know, the blog or the email and send it to Scott.
Right.
Please point out anything that's wrong here. So I said in the review, there are many crediting problems and I'd like to point them out. And here we go. The first one, Reset with a Hook, is Paul Harris's Reset with a great blackjack presentation. And it's a presentation that belongs to Jason Randall, who published it over 20 years ago. And in fact, Jason Randall even performed it on The Letterman Show recently. There is no credit. And that's in Jason Randall's book. I think it's called Magic for Professionals. You can look it up. It's a blackjack presentation for Reset. It's Jason's, and Gregory knows it's Jason's because Gregory and I have spoken about it. He knows it's Jason's. He didn't give Jason credit for that.
Do you know what the title of the trick is?
Something like Blackjack Reset or something. If you look up Magic for Professionals, it's very easy to find.
Okay.
It's something like Blackjack Reset. I don't know.
That's number one.
Here we go. The strongest part of Box Spring is an alternative for the extraction of the last card that Wilson explains in studio. It's an Arthur Buckley move. No credit. The Arthur Buckley move is called Card Through Case from Card Control. It's on page 158 of Card Control. If you look up in Card Control, page 158, and look at Gregory's, the fourth phase of this trick called Box Spring, it's exactly the same thing. And Gregory has tried to say, It's different in private conversations. And he might have on your podcast said it's different, or maybe it's something else. But he's tried to tell me it's different. It's exactly 100% the same. You put a box of, you know, you put cards in a box, mm-hmm. and one card is actually secretly outside of the box. Mm-hmm. Person holds onto the box, you slap the box, they're left holding the card.
Correct.
As if the card penetrates the box. Exactly 100% the same. Look it up. Look at the DVD.
I've seen that done with a dog.
Yeah. Look it up.
Pack in the dog's mouth and they hit the.
Look it up in Arthur Buckley's book to see it's exactly the same. Card to Pocket. Card to Pocket combines Francis Carlyle's homing card and David Williamson's 51 cards to pocket. Carlyle is not credited at all. And the only mention Williamson gets is, and I'm quoting, David Williamson has his own version of 51 cards to pocket. And what I said in my review was saying David Williamson has his own version of 51 cards to pocket is kind of like saying, and Vernon has his own version of Triumph. Or it's like saying Paul Curry has in his own version.
Out of this world.
World.
Yeah.
So cards to pocket, the homing card, Francis Carlyle. Well, that's in Stars of Magic. Anybody can look it up in Stars of Magic. It's absolutely in Stars of Magic. Gregory did not mention Francis Carlyle or the homing card or Stars of Magic. And regarding the 51 cards to pocket, you know, and he says Dave Williamson has his own version. Gregory said, I was doing it before Dave Williamson. I'm like, what? I said, I said, David Williamson published this in 1989.
Williamson's Wonders?
Yeah. You, and he might have even published it before then. It might be instead of Williamson's Selections. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Williamson, some of the stuff that ended up in Williamson's Wonders was also in Lecture Notes earlier. I don't know if this was. Even if it wasn't, it was published in 89 by Williamson. He goes, I was doing it before Williamson. I said, in the 80s? You were doing this in the 80s? And he said, yeah. I said, can you tell me the name of anybody who saw you do it in the 80s? He couldn't give me a single name of someone who did in the 80s because he said, I think he said he did it in a restaurant. I was doing it in a restaurant. So I can't name any magicians who saw me because patrons of the restaurant saw it. So I said, so nobody that you can name saw you do it in the 80s? He said, no. Okay. So let's assume that's true. Okay. Let's assume he's doing the 80s.
That's Williams, entirely possible to believe. I mean, there are things that you do, but you don't publish, and then later someone else comes out with the same idea.
It is possible.
Yeah, okay.
It absolutely is possible.
Okay, let's go with that.
But let's think about this. Let's explore this for a minute. He was doing the 80s. Then in 89, whether Greg's been doing it for 1 year or 2 years or 10 years or 5 years, whatever, Williamson publishes it. And he doesn't say anything to anybody, doesn't say a word about it. And that's a legitimate course of action. If somebody publishes something you've been doing, you might go, well, too bad he got there first.
Exactly.
Or, oh, I should have published it to establish his mind, and I didn't. That's legitimate. Or, you know, so he doesn't have a conversation with Dave Williamson. He never once says, you know, Dave, I've been doing that. Or, Dave, you know I've been doing that. You saw me do it. Or, funny coincidence, I do that same thing, and I've been doing it for years. Never says anything about it, ever. And then he waits 16 years and now tries to claim it? You don't wait. It's a modern classic. 51 Cards to Pocket is a modern classic, a great, great, brilliant thing. And for 16 years, it's been established as Dave Williamson's, and many, 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 many magicians have done it, and we all love it, and we all, you know, go, Williamson, it's a great, great thing. You don't wait 16 years after and then try and claim it.
You know, on a related note, I was just talking with Cosmo Solano about his International Pocket Change and that discussion they had against his Gregory's Exact Change. And a quote that Cosmo gave me was, and he said, I wrote this down actually as he was telling me this over the phone, is that I've had that idea for about 5 years, but since you're putting yours out, I'm going to release mine also.
Yeah.
But in other words, he wasn't going to be releasing it, but since someone else is, like, I'm going to try and compete with you.
Well, that's something he does over and over and over again. And we'll talk about that later. We'll get to that. That's a separate issue. But that is a tactic and a technique that he's done many, many, many times. But anyway, so not only that, not only in this conversation is Gregory trying to claim that he was doing it 20 years ago, never said anything to anybody for 20 years. Waits till 16 years after Williamson published it and tries to take credit. Well, then, like a year later, I had another conversation with him about it. And he said, you know, that's not even Williamson's. It's not even Williamson's. I'm trying to remember the magician he named. I believe it was Edward Victor. It might have been a different magician, but my memory is it was Edward Victor. He goes, it's Edward Victor's. Edward Victor was doing the same basic thing. It's in one of his books. Edward Victor had that. So it's not even Williamson's. So my response to that is, well, then that's one more person you didn't fail to credit, isn't it?
Right.
It doesn't make Gregory look better.
It makes
Gregory look worse.
Yeah.
Because here's another person you failed to credit. Okay, moving on from 51 Cards to Pocket. And this is one that Gregory mentioned on your podcast. And here's what I said in the review. In Flat Out Monty, the inventors of two of the four phases, Paul Harris and Joel Givens, are not credited. That's what I said. So he had a three-card Monty where you don't bend the cards like in a typical street three-card Monty. The cards are flat, you know. Gregory's is a four-phase routine. Two of the phases, as far as I know, are Gregory's. But one of the phases is Paul Harris's, and one of them is Joel Givens. Neither of them were credited. The Paul Harris one is called Double Monty. It can be found in The Art of Astonishment. It's on page 121 of Art of Astonishment, and you can look at it, and it is absolutely 100% exactly the same thing. there's a moment where you outjog the middle card, and then you have to secretly line up two cards. It's possible that the way Gregory lines up the two cards is slightly different. You know, you have to align them, so you have to slide them in your hand. Maybe Gregory slightly lines them up differently, but that's a very, very trivial thing. Other than that, you show the three cards, you do a double, you show the bottom, you outjog the middle one, you line them up, you put down what is apparently one card on the table, and it's really a double, and you show that the one card are two, and now the two cards are one. It's 100% the same thing. It's in Art of Astonishment. And it was also published earlier. I don't know which book it was published earlier. I think maybe Super Magic, but I'm not sure. But it's also in an earlier Paul Harris book. Paul Harris is not credited. Then there's the Joel Givens routine. Joel Givens is called Monty 101. It's in Semi-Automatic Card Tricks, Volume 3 by Steve Beam. I think page 40. I'm not sure. So if anybody cares to look up Semi-Automatic Card Tricks, Volume 3 by Steve Beam. It's called Monty 101. It's the second phase of Joel Givens' routine. It also happens to be the second phase of Gregory Wilson's routine, and it is absolutely 100% completely the same thing. Oh, and it also, I'm 90% sure, it's in Joel Givens' book. I believe it's called Sessions by Joshua Jay. If you have that book, I'm pretty sure it's in that book as well. So it's Monty 101. It's 100%, exactly 100% the same thing. And Gregory, on your podcast, says two things. He says, you know, I've talked to Joel. Joel doesn't care. Well, that's beside the point. You know, you don't credit or not, depending on whether you guess the person will or will not care. You credit somebody. You publish somebody else's move, somebody else's tricks, you know, your variation. You say, this is his. You don't go, is he going to care? No. You just credit him and his feelings. You don't take into consideration unless you call him beforehand and he specifically says, don't give me credit. I don't care. Don't give me credit. Right. But after the fact, you can't go, he doesn't care. And I got to tell you, 10 years ago when Joel talked to me on the phone, he did care. We had a conversation about it when this review came out. Joel called me and he did care. Maybe now he doesn't care. Maybe 10 years later he doesn't care. If Joel cares to chime in and tell us how much he cares now or doesn't care now, that's fine. But 10 years ago, when we talked on the phone, he did care. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but that's beside the point.
Well, and then second thing you were probably going to say is just that he said the move was different.
He said the move was different. And it is 100% absolutely completely identical. And I'll tell you what it is. It's very quick. It's very simple. It's a very straightforward thing. You've got three cards. The money card is in the middle. Mm-hmm. You do a double turnover. Show the money card, turn the double down, deal the top card to the table. We think it's the money card and it's not. You take the other two cards, which we think are the non-money cards, you put one to the right of it on the table, one to the left of it on the table. Mm-hmm. You switch two cards, then you switch another two cards, and you show the money card is not where people think it is.
Well, isn't that the same thing as just direct from Emerson West, Color Monty? I mean, the same instructions?
It might be. I'm not familiar. You know, there is one phase in Joel's routine that absolutely is from the Emerson and West thing. And there might be a phase in Gregory's routine that is from that. I'm not sure. I don't know if this particular phase is from the Emerson and West. And if it is, Gregory should have credited that as well.
There you go again, right.
if Joel and Gregory also took this, not took it, but, you know, it's duplicated from the Emerson and West, they both should have credited. So if it is, Gregory should have credited Joel or Emerson West or both. But anyway, I do know that Joel's, it's 100%. You do a double, you deal the card to the table. We think it's money card, it's not. You put one card on either side of it, and then you do a switch. You do another switch that the audience can follow very easily, and you show the card's not over there. It's 100% exactly the same. Anybody, watch Greg's DVD. Read Monty 101 from Semi-Automatic Volume 3. You'll see it's 100% the same. Gregory on your podcast said, it's not the same.
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm. Moving on, Chip on Shoulder, which has the whole Apollo Robbins issue, which I won't get into. Mm-hmm. But Apollo told his story.
Right.
And Greg told his story. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't think either can... Anyway, they told their stories. But in that Chip on Shoulder routine, it begins with a coin production idea from Simply Harkey. Gregory does not credit David Harkey or Simply Harkey. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the Harkey coin trick is. It's very easy to find in Simply Harkey. It's in a coin routine where you've got a coin glued to the back of your hand. You flip the coin and you make it appear on the back of your hand. And, you know, and he does that in Gregory's trick chip on shoulder. It's right out of Simply Harkey. Gregory, no credit whatsoever.
And that book was like, was it late 70s or early 80s?
I think it was the 80s. Yeah. 80s. I don't think it was the 70s.
Okay, time ago.
Yeah. Then the main idea behind a trick called Kissing Up has been published by Charlie Miller, Michael Ammar, Steve Mayhew, Chad Long, and others. No credit. And that's where my memory is. I might get the one little detail about this wrong, is you have an item wrapped in flash paper. You set the flash paper on fire and you produce it, you know, in the ball of flame. So, you know, it's an idea, like I said, lots of people have done it. Charlie Miller, Ammar, Mayhew, Chad Long. No credit. You know, no credit to any of these other people. This is just sort of unfortunate where Greg maybe thinks he was giving credit, but he wasn't. Bounce No Bounce is one of Daryl's marketed items. Mm-hmm. The full extent of crediting is Wilson holds up one of the black balls and he says, "We know what this is." Well, we don't know what this is. Some people don't know what this is. And even if everybody watching knows what this is, that's not sufficient. It's Daryl's marketed thing. You say, "This is a Bounce No Bounce ball. It's marketed by Daryl." You don't say, "We know what this is." You say it's Daryl's.
Right.
You say what it is.
You don't want to assume too much, I agree.
Mm-hmm. You say the name, you give the credit. And maybe that's an unfortunate, you know, oversight on Greg's part. And he thought he was giving credit and he wasn't. Well, you know, even if it's an unfortunate oversight and he meant to be giving Daryl credit, after the fact, when it's been pointed out that you dropped the ball here, you rectify that. You go public and say, "I dropped the ball. I should have credited Daryl and I didn't. And I'm sorry, I should have credited," you know. You rectify it. You don't deny it and ignore it for 10 years. Okay, next thing from the review. The explanation for King Size Travelers features a very unfortunate credit attempt. As Wilson is explaining a card slide, he says, quote, and this is a direct quote from the DVD, "This move was independently conceived by Seth Kramer in New York, who actually put this in Apocalypse before I did, probably by 8, 9, 10 years. And the way he phrased it is awkward, but what he meant was, Seth Kramer published this before I published it, 8, 9, 10 years before I published it. The way he phrased it is slightly awkward. But, and so what I said in the review is, if somebody publishes a move a decade before you publish it, he didn't, quote, independently conceive it. He invented it. You know?
Yeah.
If he published it 10 years ago and now you're publishing it, that's not independent. That's not his independent, you know, conception. That's his invention of it, you know?
Yeah, if it's one I'm thinking of, actually, I spoke to Seth who said that I believe he was a teenager when he first started doing that move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was that long ago.
Yeah.
And he's not a young guy, as are any of us, but anymore.
Yeah, none of us. We're all getting up there in age. Sure. And so now Gregory on your podcast says it's a different move. It's a different move. It's a different move. Well, 10 years ago, it was the same move. 10 years ago, it was so much the same move that you decided you needed to credit Seth Kramer. How is it that 10 years ago on your DVD, it is so much the same move that you had to credit Seth Kramer? And now, 10 years later, it's a different move. Well, if it's a different move, why did you credit Seth Kramer?
It hasn't evolved. It's still the same move.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If it's a different move, why did you credit Seth Kramer? Well, it's not a different move. It's the same move it's always been. All right, next thing. Stunt double. Stunt double uses a spread pass involving an out jog card, a move Wilson claims is his own. However, he adds, and I'm quoting is the exact way he phrased it, "Michael Weber independently conceived this idea, although I beat him by a few years." And because I know many magicians who tell me they saw Weber do this way, 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 way before they ever saw Gregory do it, or Gregory, you know, published or Gregory claimed it. Because I've had many LA magicians claim they've seen Weber do this. I called Weber and I quoted him in the review and I said, "On this topic, Weber told me, quote, Greg and I have discussed it, and he claims priority, but I don't agree. It's neither a fight nor a big deal. Greg and I have a long and pleasant association. We disagree on many small things, like institutional religion, the use of puns and magic, and the origin of this move. Yeah. So, you know, this is one of those, he said, he said. Mm-hmm. Greg claims this, Michael claims this, but I have several magicians who tell me, and they can tell me dates back in the early 80s where, you know, Weber was doing this move, you know, and Weber can tell you when he showed it, when he showed it to Gregory, because Weber told me the story that I think it was in a restaurant. I'm not sure, but Weber can tell you when, you know, at least when he claims he showed it to Gregory. And it was after that date that people saw, you know, Gregory doing the move. Mm-hmm. And this, if I'm not mistaken, I might be wrong about this, but I don't think so. In the Ricky Jay documentary, Ricky Jay tells the story about meeting. I mean, Weber tells the story about meeting Ricky Jay. And this is the move that he showed Ricky Jay.
The same move, yeah, that he showed
the
Greg.
Same move. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the same move. And I mean, I don't know when, what year that was that Weber met Ricky Jay, but I know it was a long time ago. And so anybody who knows when Weber met Ricky Jay, you know, they would know when this was. I don't know when that was, but that'd be something that if anybody wanted to research that, that's, you know, another little piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm. And now a word from our sponsor, ManageGigs.com. I want to again thank and welcome our advertiser for the Magic Word Podcast, and this is Chris Stoltz, founder and creator of ManageGigs.com. Hi there, Chris.
Hi, Scott.
Well, this week I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the favorite features. There are so many different things that you can do with Manage Gigs. In order to just do that, manage your gigs, what specific or favorite features do you like about the program?
So for me, it's the interconnectivity of everything. So when I started designing the system, I quickly realized that customers, gigs, your performance material, your set list, all the actual gear you put in the car should all be connected. So what's really cool is you go and you create a gig and you add a customer to it, of course, and you can also attach a set list. And so one of my favorite things to make was the set list builder. It's a drag and drop set list builder. So you've got all of your performance material and you just drag and drop it and move it around and put it in whatever order you want for your show. Mm-hmm. And then on the morning of the gig, you click on your gig sheet and it opens up and it gives you all the information, all the customer information, your set list. And what's really cool is that the system is smart enough to know what's connected to what. So it takes your set list and it actually gives you all of the gear for each of those performance material items, so that as I'm packing my car, because this is a problem I had all the time, is I'd pack something and then forget that I packed it and go looking for it. So,
well, hasn't that happened to all of us at one point or another?
Yeah, so now I just have a set list and I also have a gear list, and I just have to pack things in the car once, check it off, and I know it's been done. It's great.
And of course you can print that out and take that with you.
Yeah, exactly. It's made to be in a printable size on 8.5 by 11, so you just print it out and you're ready to go.
That sounds great. All of that and more is available over at ManageGigs.com, and for a while right now, you can get a 7-day free trial. So if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, go down to the bottom of the screen over there of the blog, and you'll see a banner ad there that will take you directly to ManageGigs.com, where you can get that 7-day free trial. Thank you very much, Chris. I appreciate you being an advertiser here on the Magic Word Podcast.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
And now back to our conversation with John Lovick.
Then there were things that I didn't get into in the published review because I had to cut it from 3,000 words to 1,000 words. And so these aren't in the printed review, but these are things that I talked to Greg about, and he did his usual spin. A trick called Off Base. I said it's very similar in effect and method to Daryl's Breakthrough and Kevin James's Perrier with a twist. It's not exactly the same as either of those, but it's very, very similar to both of them. Greg gave no credit to either of them. And there's a thing called Time Card. And this is one where I don't know who exactly credit this belongs to, but it's not my job to know. I didn't publish this trick. If I published this trick, it'd be my job to try and find out and either say, I haven't been able to track down the exact origins, or I would have tracked them down. But it's a trick that where you do a bunch of cards are produced and they predict the time of day and date, or either the date or the time or both or whatever, that the trick is done. And Paul Harris has a version of this, and Eugene Berger has a version, and there are other versions. And I don't know the exact, you know, the exact history of this trick, but it's, you know, people preceded Gregory, and he didn't credit anybody else. So those are the things that are in print. I put them in print 11 years ago, and I'm going over them now, and anybody can look at them and investigate them. And, you know,
yeah, you're on record of saying this, and Greg has not yeah. come back and said, this specifically is wrong.
Yeah.
With any of them.
And so there's that. And so, like I said, 10 years ago, these were just crediting issues. Well, you know, now it's become something more. And this is one of the reasons, you know, why, you know, he keeps saying, I don't know why I've got this problem. You know, people say I'm this based on nothing whatsoever. And he's got this interesting conspiracy theory, you know, revolving around Bob Kohler, that nobody has any real problem with Gregory, just that Bob Kohler goes around and whispers in people's ears. And, you know, Gregory Wilson's a thief. And we all go, Gregory Wilson's a thief. Must hate Gregory Wilson. Gregory Wilson's a thief. Well, you know, I would say that you might want to talk to Bob Kohler and see what Bob Kohler did to become the center of his conspiracy theory. Because I got to tell you, I guarantee you that, I mean, I know Bob Kohler. I've met him, but I don't know that we've ever spoken on the phone. I've never exchanged emails with him. I've never sat down and had a lengthy conversation with him. I see him maybe once a year, you know, in Vegas, mm-hmm. you know, when I go to Magic Live or Matt King's for Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Matt has these big Thanksgiving dinners with lots of magicians, and Bob Kohler's usually there, and I'm friendly with Bob, and he's a nice guy, and we've spoken. But I don't think we've ever had a conversation about Gregory Wilson. And Bob Kohler's opinion about anything has never influenced my opinion about anything, specifically Greg Wilson. I don't think we've ever spoken about him. And Apollo has confirmed that, no, Bob Kohler's, you know, isn't the one who whispered in my ear. My dealings with Gregory are where I've got my opinion. And I would bet $100 if you call Seth Kramer would say, well, the problem I got with Gregory is because he did this. It's not because Bob Kohler whispered in my ear. And you know, and Bob lives in Vegas. Seth Kramer lives in, I think,
East Coast.
Long Island.
Yeah.
He lives on Long Island, you know. And psychologically, it's easy to understand this. I mean, if there's many people who have problems with Gregory, and if the reasons we have problems with Gregory are because of the things he's done, the things he's said to us, the things we've seen him do, the things we've seen him, you know, say to others and do to others, well, then he's accountable for that. And there's many, many people that have problems, and he's done many, many things, and he's accountable. Or if the problem is that Bob Kohler's going around whispering in people's ears, and people are going, Gregory Wilson's a thief, must hate Gregory Wilson. Well, then not only has Gregory not done anything, now he's a victim. If it's this one guy going around, you know, convincing people of things, well, Gregory's done nothing wrong and is a victim. And so two of the things, like, you know, when Apollo told his story, you know, Greg says, I called Apollo and Apollo gave me permission. Then Bob Kohler whispered in his ear, Gregory stole your routine. Gregory stole your routine. Well, if that happened, what you would say, if you gave someone permission to publish something, mm-hmm. and someone came up to you and said he stole your routine, you'd say, no, he didn't steal. I gave him permission.
Sure.
He could say to you, he stole your routine 100 times, and 100 times you would say,
No,
I gave him permission.
Right.
Someone saying he stole your routine doesn't make you go, forget you gave him permission. Doesn't make you go, oh, Gregory Wilson's a thief.
You're not going to change your mind. You mean you did what you did.
Mm-hmm. It wouldn't. You know what you did. You know you gave him permission. Someone else saying he stole it doesn't change the facts as you know them.
Right.
Yeah. So like, you know, one of these conversations I had with Gregory, this was at this was at the Thin Air Summit, you know, 2 years ago or a year and a half ago. Thin Air Summit, you know, I'm like, well, why are you so mad at me, Greg? And he goes, he said something about all the problems I'm causing, all the problems I'm causing. And I'm like, what problems I'm causing? And he says, all the, you know, the negativity I'm stirring up. And I'm like, what negativity am I stirring up? And he says, Jim Steinmeier was at a party and Jim Steinmeier said, you know, was bad mouthing me at this party. And I'm like, what does that have to do with me? And he goes, and Rob Zabrecki said this about me. And I'm like, what does that have to do with me? He goes, well, you all get together. I'm like, I guarantee you. I said, Greg, I guarantee you that Jim Steinmeier and Rob Zabrecki and I have never gotten together. Ever once. The three of us have never met for lunch. We've never had dinner together. I'm sure we've been in the same room because we've all attended the Magic History Conference, or maybe we've been at, you know, a convention together at the Magic Castle in the same night. Sure, but the three of us have never gotten together. And I've, you know, known Steinmeier for years. I don't know him well. I like him a lot, but he lives in L.A. I live in L.A., so I see him. And, you know, we speak, but I guarantee you in the many, many years I've known Jim Steinmeier, we've never once talked about Gregory Wilson. His name has never once come up in conversation. And, you know, Gregory talked on your podcast about, you know, the people get together. I think he compared us all to schoolgirls or something.
Some
you know,
knitting club or something like
knitting
that.
Knitting club, you know. Yeah, and I'll guarantee you there aren't groups of us that are getting together saying, you know, must hate Gregory Wilson, must hate Gregory Wilson. You know, we aren't getting together on a daily, weekly basis doing this. You know, what does happen is you get together, groups of people, you're talking, what's new, what's going on, and it happens on a, you know, more often than it should is people go, oh, you won't believe, you know, what Gregory said to me, or you won't believe what Gregory does. And I'll get to, and here's where also Gregory says, no one can say what I've stolen. No one can, you know, I'll say, what did I do? And can people say, you know, no one can say what I have a reputation and it's undeserved. Well, here's what happens. And this happens over and over and over again. This has happened literally hundreds of times. And you talk to anybody in LA, any of the guys who work in LA, any of the guys who gig, any of the guys who go to conventions or, you know, work the castle, you ask anybody and they will tell you this has happened to them or they have observed this happening. And anybody listening who has had this happen to them with Gregory or has seen Gregory do it, please email Scott or put them on the blog. And because I'm telling you, this literally happens over and over and over and over and over again, constantly. It has literally happened hundreds of times. And anybody who can confirm this, please email in and confirm that I'm not just making this up.
Well, nobody really has been going on the record up until now. And this is interesting that Alex Rangel had posted on his Facebook page and then said in a podcast here recently that he accuses Gregory being the Bill Cosby of magic because there are people who have had complaints against him for 5, 10, 15, 20 years and are now coming forward all that you haven't heard about. I was at a magic meeting the other night and there was a young man who's in his teens, been involved, and he's a very good dove magician, dove worker. Actually, he won a junior contest at the TAOM recently. The point is that he's an astute magician and he reads and he learns a lot. But he said to me, what's this deal about Greg? He said, I see him all the time on at the table lectures, and he does give credit. He talks about this guy, you know, was one responsible for this, that, and he said he seems like the most charismatic, great guy. He said, I don't understand what people are saying against him. So a lot of young people who, I say young people, those who are neophytes into our industry, our craft, may not have heard those stories. When you're saying there are people who are lined up, a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah. So, yes, and what I am referring to, what I'm saying, the tactic that Gregory, or the thing that Gregory does that I'm referring to, that I'm getting to, and I say, and anybody who's encountered this, anybody's experienced this, please email in or post on the blog and tell us, you know, any details about it. He did it to me, you know, on this date or this occasion or regarding this trick or whatever. And if you've seen it many, many times, tell us about the times. And what he does is, it seems like almost every time he sees something, I won't say it's every time, but it sure seems that way to those of us who, you know, around him a lot, is he'll see a trick or he'll go to a show or you'll show him something and he'll say, I do that. I've been working on that. Oh, I'm working on that idea. Oh, I've done that for years. Oh, that's in my notebook. I've been working on that. I've been doing that. That's mine. I've done that. Oh, I've performed that. I've performed that for years. I used to perform that. I do that.
Well, I guess it'd be kind of funny. I remember Ricky Dunn saying that a lot. It's like, okay, you know, to some point you kind of believe it, you know, and then after a point it's like, no, you haven't invented the whole thing. It's like, okay, well, just kind of take it at face value.
Now the thing about it is that doesn't make him a thief. The fact that he says that has done that literally hundreds of times. You know, the fact that he does that literally hundreds of times about almost everything he sees, the fact that he does that, that does not make him a thief. But man, it sort of creates an impression in your mind that what he's doing is he's setting up to steal that. Is that a few months from now, he'll start doing it. He just saw me do it. Now he's going to start doing it, and he can say, I saw you do it. Now, people have their stories about that happening. Him saying, I've been doing that. I have that idea. I'm working on that. That doesn't make him a thief. But when you see him do that over and over and over again, it creates an impression. It's like if it was my habit to go through parking lots and look in car windows and check the handles of cars and see what cars are unlocked. That doesn't make me a car thief. I can do that every day for the rest of my life and never steal a car. But if I do that over and over and over again every day, and everyone sees me doing that, looking in cars, checking car handles, well, it creates an impression. And the fact that Gregory does this, it creates this terrible impression.
Ah, I see.
You know? Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things he does. Now, I'm going to pause here, edit this out. Like I said, that creates an impression in people's mind, because that is something that doesn't make Gregory thief, but that is something that the thief would do. That is somebody who likes to steal material. That's one of the techniques they use. That in and of itself doesn't make you a thief, but it's a technique that thieves use. And so it doesn't do anything good for his reputation. Even if he's 100% innocent, it doesn't do anything good for his reputation. The other thing that he does a lot, and he did it on your podcast, he's done it in private conversations with me many, many times, and he said this on your podcast. He said, why would I steal material, you know, when I've got so much of my own material? He said, I'm so creative. I have so much of my own material. I think on your podcast, he said, I have enough material for 10 lifetimes. Well, on its face, that's a terrible argument. That's like saying a rich person wouldn't steal money. Well, we all know rich people steal money all the time.
Well, that was my answer to when he said that also was just that, well, you do it for money, to make money off of marketing those products.
Exactly. You would do it for money. But to say, I've got so much material, I wouldn't need to steal, is a bad argument, because rich people steal all the time. I'm not saying all rich people steal. Rich people do steal. But if you look at the stuff he markets, he does one of two things over and over and over again, sometimes both of them, is you look at his products, and I'll go down the list. I'm going to absolutely go down the list right now. What he does over and over and over again is he takes somebody's trick, and he sees somebody do something, and he goes, hey, that's really cool. How about I market this for you? I take this trick of yours, and I give you credit, and I put it out, and you know, we have it manufactured, and we put it out, and we sell it, and we split the profits. He does that over and over again. Now, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, because he can use his celebrity status, and he can use his contacts.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. If he sees somebody who doesn't have a name, the person would realize that if I put this out with Gregory's name on it, it's going to sell way better.
Sure.
So this is a perfectly valid marketing, you know, on both their parts. There's nothing wrong with this. There's nothing wrong with Gregory's part or the person who goes along with Gregory and markets stuff with him. The other thing that he does over and over and over again is that he's got a product to sell, and he goes to, you know, 5 or 10 or 20 magicians. He said, here's a gimmick. Use this gimmick, play around with it, come up with a routine. And then he takes 5 or 10 or 20 routines of other magicians, and he puts them on the product. Again, nothing wrong with it. It's a really, really smart business model. If I could buy a gimmick that has one routine, you know, in the instructions, or if it has 20 routines in the instructions, I want to buy the one that has 20 routines in the instructions.
Sure.
That's a really, really good, smart business model. it's very successful. And sometimes, you know, Gregory does both. He finds a trick of somebody's. He says, hey, that's really cool. How about we go into partnership, I'll manufacture this, and then I'll get a bunch of magicians to contribute routines, and we'll slap it together and market it. Sometimes he does both. So if you do that, if that's your business model over and over and over and over again, well, you can no longer use as your defense the argument that I'm so creative, I have enough material for 10 lifetimes, so I would never steal. You can't use that argument if over and over again your business model is rely on other people's creativity.
And you're marketing their ideas. I mean, legitimately and everything, yeah. But it's not your idea.
Yeah. Even, you know, what he's doing is, I'm sure, completely legitimate. But if you over and over again rely on other people's creativity for your marketed product, you can't say, I have enough material for 10 lifetimes.
Good point.
Okay, and let's go over the stuff that he's done this on. So people know I'm not just, you know, pulling shit out of the air. People can research this. We can break it down. So an early example, Stockholder. Stockholder was his out to lunch wallet. Mm-hmm. Really nice product, really well designed, well manufactured. It came with, you know, 20 or 25 routines by, you know, 15 or 20 other magicians. It's a Dave Grippenwald idea. And in very tiny print, Dave Grippenwald gets credit. On the opening of the instructions, it says, based on an idea by Dave Grippenwald. And there are 20 and 25 routines, whatever, by other magicians. Nothing wrong with this product, but somebody else's idea, other people's routines. Ringleader. Ringleader was an early, you know, VHS tape he put out. Ring and string moves. It relied heavily on ideas by Dave Grippenwald. It had some of Gregory's own ideas. But without those ideas by Dave Grippenwald, he arguably would not have had enough to put out a DVD. You know, you could argue he could have put out a DVD without it. But Dave's ideas really, really added a lot to it. And I think really made it worth putting out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Dave Grippenwald's ideas. Again, I'm sure with permission and I'm sure legitimately. But he has this trick called Pointless, which is the thing with the pen.
Yes.
Where the head of the pen switches. That's a trick by a guy, and I don't know how to pronounce his name. It's Christian Greiser or something like that. Christian Greiser, it's his idea. Gregory said, I'll manufacture this idea and sell it. And he credits Christian Greiser, says where it comes from. But there are also routines on that, routines by Dave Grippenwald again and Garrett Thomas and Carl Andrews. So once again, it's somebody else's idea with other people's routines.
Alec Rangel was just telling me on the podcast also in that particular case on Pointless that he sat there with Danny Garcia as Danny shared ideas which were not credited on Pointless.
Oh, okay, yeah. That I don't know about, but yeah. He's got Gregory, I don't know what he called this other, but he's got a thing he's marketing. It's a coin on shoulder. It's actually, I think, a poker chip. It's a poker chip on shoulder routine that he's marketed with
a putty,
with a purse. Oh. I think this routine is different than the one he did on his In Action DVDs. Maybe it's the exact same routine. I think it's slightly different, but he's also selling a purse, and there's something sort of special about the purse, and it comes with poker chips and everything. And I got to tell you, I'm surprised with the problems with Apollo and the sort of, you know, unclear nature about that. I would have thought he'd stay way far away from marketing coin on shoulder things. My point being, it's coin on shoulder, which Gregory acknowledges that's something he saw Apollo do. This routine that he markets would not exist no matter how much Gregory has added to it, and Gregory changed it. Gregory added to it. It's a very clever thing, but it absolutely would not exist without, you know, Apollo doing the coin on shoulder. Oh, and here's another thing. I had a conversation with Gregory about this. He goes, you know, coin on shoulder, it's not even Apollo's. Pat Page's. It's Pat Page's. Pat Page used to do it. Well, again, my response is, well, then that's one more person you didn't credit, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's see, Pip Streak. Pip Streak is a Doug Kahn idea. He took Doug Kahn's idea. I'm sure with permission, but he took Doug Kahn's idea, put it on a DVD or it's a download or whatever, and marketed it as Pip Streak. The Pickpocket Passport Wallet, that's an Alan Wong thing. Gregory took Alan Wong's idea, had the passport wallet manufactured, and is selling it now. Hyundai 500. Hyundai 500 is Pat Page's
Easy money.
Now he got credit. He got credit from Pat Page. So I mean, he did it legitimately, but it's somebody else's thing. And speaking of that, this raised some red flags for me, and two people have talked to me about this on your podcast. In him saying, I got credit from Pat Page, and he did get credit from Pat Page, and you know, it was the right thing to do. More power to him. But to make himself look good, he said, and Pat Page was really upset with Fred Capps because of Flash Cash. Mm-hmm. Did that raise any alarms for you? I mean, is there anybody in the universe that believes Pat Page was mad at Fred Capps because of Flash Cash? Now, Flash Cash was completely different, and by all accounts of everybody who was around then, Fred Capps got permission for it, and they were great friends. And I'm like, there's no way that's true. There's no way that's true. And I didn't know Pat Page well. I met him on about three occasions, but I did the Pat Page Easy Money DVD. And the way that came about is Fun Inc. was going to do a DVD on Easy Money with Pat Page, and Pat Page got cancer, and Pat Page was too ill to travel, so they couldn't do it. So Fun Inc. asked me if I would do the DVD. I would explain Pat Page's trick exactly the way Pat Page taught it, and then all the proceeds would go to Pat Page. And I'm sure with his medical bills and stuff, he needed the money, and yes. I hope he made some money from it. I did that DVD, and you know, I had conversations with Pat Page about Easy Money, and Pat loved Fred Capps, and he liked Flash Cash, which is different. The gimmick is completely different.
And all that time, he never shared a story with you about how he was upset with Fred Capps.
And he liked it, and he liked Flash Cash, and they were different tricks, and he thought they were good for different contexts. See, Flash Cash is better suited to stage. And Easy Money is better suited to close up. Now you can do Easy Money on stage and you can do Flash Cash close up, but really Flash Cash is better for stage. Easy Money is better for close up. They're different.
They are.
And but you know what? I didn't know Pat Page well, so maybe he had feelings that, you know, he harbored that he didn't share with me. And so Pete Furman, who's from England, happens to be in town this week. And so I saw Pete Furman, and I know Pete knew Pat very well. I said, Pete, is there any chance Pat Page was upset with Fred Capps about Easy Money? And he said, no chance. He said, there's no possibility for that. He said he loved Fred Capps. They were good friends. I don't think there's any chance that Pat Page was upset with that. And then I realized the person I needed to ask was Matthew Field, because Matthew Field Matthew Field wrote the Pat Page book.
Right.
You know, Matt Field knew Pat very, very well, you know, spent many, 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 many hours, you know, talking to him, working on this book. And so I emailed Matt Field. I said, is there any chance that Pat Page was upset with Fred Capps about Flash Cash? And Matthew Field said, utter bullshit. I'm quoting Matt Field right now. He goes, utter bullshit. He goes, I spoke to Pat Page about this many times. Pat Page loved Fred Capps, and he loved that Fred Capps was doing the Flash Cash version. So to give it would seem that Gregory made up a story about two.
He's the only one apparently who is sticking with that story.
Yeah, to make himself look good. To give Gregory the benefit of the doubt, maybe he's a little confused, because Pat Page was upset about Easy Money getting ripped off a lot. He invented Easy Money in the 50s. It started getting ripped off in the 50s, and it got ripped off in the 60s, and it got ripped off in the 70s, and it got ripped off in the 80s and the 90s and the 1000s. It got ripped off over and over and over again. And he was upset about that. So maybe Pat Page said something to Gregory about being upset about it being ripped off, and Gregory's misremembering it as being about Fred Capps. To give him the benefit of the doubt, maybe it's something like that. But it sure seems like, I don't know. I don't know. But that's giving the benefit of the doubt.
Well, those are quite a few things that you mentioned over there that kind of goes to the point.
I'm halfway through the list.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'll go through the rest of it quickly. He's got the new Bill Change DVD project with Carl Hine called, I think, Switchcraft. It is more easy money routines and ideas. They all use the easy money gimmick, but there's ideas of Gregory's and ideas of Carl Hine's. Again, completely legitimate, but without Carl Hine's stuff, there's arguably not enough to justify including this. He's got a trick called Free Key. As far as I know, the gimmick on Free Key is Gregory's gimmick. I don't think that's someone else's. I think that's Gregory's. But it's got routines by, 5, 10, 20 other magicians. He's got this thing called Foreign Exchange. He's got a couple of versions of Foreign Exchange. That is based on and a very, very, very slight variation of Bill Goldman's Chameleon Bill. Mm-hmm. And I hope he credits Bill Goldman on those.
Oh, he may have. I think I remember seeing that appear first in Magic Magazine.
Yeah. I hope he credits Bill Goldman. I think he does. But, it's a very slight variation of Bill Goldman's thing. It would not exist without Bill Goldman's idea of Foreign Exchange. He's got this thing, Pure Smoke. Pure Smoke is this other guy's gimmick, Jay Brumbelow or something like that. I hope I'm getting his name right. Jay Brumbelow. That's not Gregory's, but Gregory saw it and says, hey, I'd like to, put a DVD or a download or whatever with ideas about how to use this. He's got this thing called Codebreaker. It's a Michael Murray thing. It's an iPhone trick, and it's Michael Murray's thing, and Gregory and Michael Murray, put it out together. Exact Change, and you've heard the story from Apollo about Exact Change, and apparently you've spoken to Cosmo about Exact Change. But more specifically and to the point is Exact Change has 15 or 20 or 25 routines by other magicians. And then this deck spinner thing has a gimmick that is and he mentioned the story with Brent Garris, and you need to get Brent Garris' side of that.
I did. I spoke to Brent.
Okay, good, because Gregory made Brent look very bad, and Gregory told about 10% of that story. And so I'm glad you talked to Brent, because Brent's side of that story, needs to be told. So anyway, I just listed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 15, 14, 15, 16 things. It's either somebody else's idea or gimmick, or it's combined with, 10 other people's routines, or it's both. Again, nothing wrong with that. But if you do that, and you can see he does it over and over and over again, I'm so creative, I would never steal is no longer a defense.
Mm-hmm. Hard to argue that point. Yeah. Well, one of the things that Apollo Robbins had mentioned then also, of course, was that story about Rob Zabrecki's lecture notes and everything. And I spoke to Rob and asked if he would be glad also, since the three of you were involved, it was Greg, you, and Rob. Rob said, I have nothing more to add to that because it was pretty much exactly what went down. He said, how Apollo mentioned it or said it. And he said, so I'd just be kind of rehashing it. I said, well, can you send me a statement? So let me just kind of read that into the record least here, where he says, greetings, Scott. Apollo Robbins' account of my encounter with Gregory Wilson on your podcast is accurate. It took place at the Magic Castle in April of 2012, shortly after a lecture I presented to convention attendees titled The Alphabet Talk, also known as ABCs of Magic. John Lovick was present and witnessed our exchange. Sincerely, Rob Zabrecki. So,
It wasn't at the Magic Castle, it was at MagicCon. Did he say Magic Castle?
I'm sorry, MagicCon. MagicCon. Yeah. I need glasses.
Yeah. Apollo's story. I mean, Apollo was telling the story secondhand, but it was substantially accurate, and I will reiterate the story, quickly, so that anyone who didn't listen to Apollo's podcast can get the story. But this was at MagicCon, and Rob just gave the date. I don't know the date, but Rob just gave it.
April 2012, they said.
All right, April 2012. Zabrecki gave a talk called, I think it was called The ABCs of Magic. And it was a lecture where he went through the alphabet, one letter at a time, saying A is for acting. And then he expanded on the importance of acting or whatever. And B is for, I don't know what B stood for, belief or whatever. And he had, it was a slide presentation, and it was a really great talk. It was very well received. It was really smart and, funny and wonderful. And Zabrecki's great. And it was a very effective, powerful talk. Now, it's not a revolutionary idea for a talk, going through the alphabet, the ABCs of magic, and having one idea for each letter of the alphabet. It's not revolutionary, but it was very effective. right after the talk, Gregory came up to Rob Zabrecki and goes, I've got an alphabet lecture too. And Gregory goes, Rob goes, oh, when have you done it? He goes, I haven't done it. I've had it in my notes for 6 years. It's this idea. I've got it in my notes. I've been writing it and I'm working on it. And I'm going to do an alphabet lecture myself. And Rob's like, what do you want from me? You want my blessing? You know, I can't give you my blessing. You saw me do it. And now you say you're going to do it. So whatever, Greg, do what you want to do. If you're going to do it now that you've seen me do it, fine, whatever. Whatever. And, you know, because Rob has heard all those stories about Gregory sees you do something and he says, I have that idea. And he's just said, Greg, do whatever you're going to do, what you're going to do, whatever. Well, later that afternoon, Gregory called and he says, you know, I've got proof that I've had that idea for years. I've got it on my computer. I can come show it to you on my computer. I've been doing it for years. I've got proof. And Rob says, okay, show me your proof. And he hung up the phone. I said, okay, Rob, here's what you're going to do. I said, he's going to show you on his computer. It's probably going to be in a Word document. And if you go up to the file menu, you go down to what's called properties. And the properties will tell you when that document was created and when it was modified. So when he shows it to you, ask him to go to the file menu and go down to properties and show, you know, when it was created and when it was modified. So we meet Greg, and Greg says, I don't want to do this in front of Lovick. And Rob says, anything you say to me, you can say in front of Lovick, you know, because I stood back. I didn't say anything, didn't interfere, didn't do anything, but I stood back, but I was there when this happened. And so Greg opened up this document, and the document was a long, 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 very long document with, you know, trick ideas and essay ideas and, you know, all these things that he's working on and stuff he's compiled over years. And his, I guess it's his, you know, computer journal or whatever. I don't know how he would characterize it, but it was a really long, it was a whole bunch of stuff, lots and lots and lots of stuff. And right in the middle of it, with no context whatsoever, was just a list, the alphabet A, B, C, D, E, F, G, with a word by every letter of the alphabet. There was no, there's no title to it. There's no introduction. There's no idea for a lecture. There's no the alphabet lecture or the ABC lecture or here's a lecture I got to work on, or there's no introductory lecture. The paragraph before it had nothing to do with it. The paragraph after it had nothing to do with it. It was in the middle of it with no context, with just a letter of the alphabet and a word. None of it was expanded. None of it was, you know, use this anecdote as an example. This is a metaphor for if D stands for
drama,
determination or whatever, yeah. You know, tell the story of, you know, demonstrate this trick as an example of, clarify it this way, demonstrate it this way, expand on. There were no notes, no writings, no nothing, nothing, just an alphabet list that you could whip up in 5 minutes, completely out of context. You know, nothing, no writing, no expansion, no notes, no nothing.
Understand.
And so, and Rob went, okay, go up to file. And he's like, what? He said, go up to the file menu. He's like, why? He said, go up to the file menu. So Greg went to the file menu. He goes, go down to properties. He went down to properties. And what Apollo said was the document was created 18 minutes ago. It wasn't created 18 minutes ago. It was created, I think, years ago. But it had been edited 18 minutes ago. And so Greg said, well, what does that prove? What does that prove? And, you know, then I stepped in. I said, it doesn't prove anything. And that's the point. You're trying to prove that you've had this idea for years. If this is your proof that you've had this idea for years, it's useless. A document that you edited 18 minutes ago cannot prove that you've had this idea for years. I can't prove that you put in this list 18 minutes ago. I can't prove that, but you also can't prove that you had this idea years ago. So this is useless as proof. If you have better proof, if you have, you know, if you've got proof, please prove it. This doesn't prove it. And then of course Gregory got, well, yeah, I don't need you. I don't need this. I got, you know, and he got mad and, you know, walked away. So that's the story. I was there. That's the way it went down. The way Apollo related is largely how it happened.
Interesting. Well, great, John. Thank you very much. I appreciate a lot of the backstory and the insight, certainly. And
I have to say one more thing.
Yes, please do.
I do have to say one more thing. That, again, Gregory talks about, he doesn't know why he has a reputation. And I have to say this because the other defense that he's offered is, you know, that he's an, you know, his, I don't know exactly how he phrased it. He talked about his ethical code, his moral code. On your podcast, mm-hmm. he talked about his standard of contact and his ethical moral code. And if you're going to put up your ethical moral code and your standard of conduct, well, then we can bring up things that you've done that exactly, you know, point to your ethical moral code and your standard of conduct. Because one of the techniques that he does, and this is, again, why Gregory has a bad reputation, is that one of the things he does, and he's done it many times, is he threatens to physically assault people. He threatens to beat people up.
As a bully.
He does this many times. I don't know that he ever has beat anybody up.
But you have been there when he has threatened people.
He has threatened me. He has threatened to physically beat me up on three occasions. Hmm. I've had conflicts with people in magic. I've had disagreements with people in magic. No one has ever thought the way to resolve it was to beat me up. Ever, except Gregory Wilson. Gregory Wilson has threatened to physically beat up John Armstrong. I don't know of anybody else in magic who's thought a way to resolve a conflict with John Armstrong was to beat him up. Gregory Wilson, I was there. He threatened to beat up John Armstrong at Havre Magic Castle. He threatened to beat up Luc Germain. And on that same occasion was one of the three times he threatened to beat me up. He threatened to beat me up and Luke. He threatened to beat up Luc Germain. And you can contact Luke. You can contact John Armstrong. You can get their confirmation.
Now, was it something to do over magic, or was he drinking a little bit?
Luke was drinking. Luke was drunk and threatened him and accused Gregory of being a thief. Luke said, "You're a thief. You're a thief." And, you know, Greg's solution was step outside. Let's step outside and solve this like gentlemen. You know, and if you don't want to step outside right now, meet me. He said, "Meet me at my dojo tomorrow." And then he also threatened Chris Smith at Magic Live last year, and it escalated such that security had to be.
And aren't they business partners?
They were business partners. I don't think they are anymore. But security. Now, I wasn't there, so I'm not going to say what went down. But you could or should talk to people there. You should talk to Chris Smith. You should talk to Stan Allen. You should talk to other people in the dealer's room. But the reports I got from people who were there and saw it happen was that Gregory was yelling at Chris Smith, threatened to physically assault him. It got so bad, security had to be called, and Gregory was escorted out of there. If it happened differently, you know, people who were there can clarify. The last time I talked to Greg, it was the first time he threatened me. I made a joke about him not being an ideal Christian, because, you know, he talks about his religion a fair amount. Mm-hmm. And I made a joke about him not being a very good Christian. And he got right up in my face. He came right. He put his face literally 1 inch from mine. And he said, "You need to watch out who you're dealing with. You should be very, very afraid of me. You have no idea what I'm capable of. You need to watch your back." And I said, "Are you threatening me? Are you threatening to beat me up?" He goes, "You have no idea."
Now, wait, if he's talking about his religion, is he saying that you're going to be smitten by God, or that I'm going to come after you physically myself personally? What did you say? What was the opinion you got from that?
It didn't seem very religious. It did not seem very religious.
It didn't sound like the wrath of God was coming down. It sounded like the wrath of Greg was.
The wrath of Greg. Oh, yeah. He said, "You need to be very afraid of me."
Of me.
He didn't seem very afraid. He said, "You need to be very, very afraid of me. You have no idea who you're dealing with, and you have no idea what I'm capable of. You need to watch your back." I'm like, "Are you threatening me? Are you going to beat me? Are you going to hit me now, Greg? Are you going to hit me?" He goes, "You just watch your back. You have no idea what I'm capable of." I said, "Greg, I take it back. obviously that Christianity thing is working out real well for you. And I walked away.
You know, it, Alex Rangel had made a comment then also saying when he was sitting at a convention and they kind of apparently got into it, and he said, 10 years ago, we would have been settling this outside. And Alex looked at him and said, yeah, 10 years ago, we would have been 10 years younger.
And the last time I when I was talking to Greg at the it was the Thin Air Summit, he said he talked to me about how many times he's fantasized about taking me out. He goes, they used to call me One Punch Wilson. He goes, because one punch and you're out. And he goes, the number of times that I've fantasized about taking you out and pummeling you and just watching you writhe in pain, he goes, that would be so satisfying. And he goes, and it may happen someday. And just think about somebody who fantasizes about watching somebody writhe in pain, and that's what gets you up. What does that say about your ethical moral code and your standard, and what the kind of person you are, that's your fantasies, watching somebody suffer?
And that was, again, a conversation that you had privately that was not verifiable by anybody else standing around listening?
No. It was in a restaurant. That cannot be verified by anybody. But I bet Greg would, you know, I don't think Greg would deny that. Mm-hmm. I don't think he would deny it. Maybe he wouldn't. If he would deny it, it's my word against his. Mm-hmm. But if Greg has physically threatened you, anybody listening to these podcasts, if Greg has threatened you, if Greg has threatened to beat you up, let us know.
Let us know. Yep.
Because this is a tactic that he uses. I've seen him do it to me, to Armstrong, to Luke Germay. He did it to Chris Smith. If he's done it to you, if you can confirm this, please do.
Well, there are also those people who have been sending me a few emails as well and saying that the comment that Apollo had made about shepherding, that is where Greg would be calling people saying, hey, are we okay? Are we cool? We're friends? You know, just that's fine. That they hadn't really thought of that before until Apollo had mentioned that. But apparently he has done that on more than one occasion with more than one individual.
Yeah. So that sums up all the stuff that I went out that can be verified. Anybody who has the time and inclination, look up all the things that I said were in my review and on his DVD. You know, check that what I said in that review is accurate. Do the research, because Gregory kept talking about evidence and a paper trail. Well, this is evidence. This is a paper trail. This is all verifiable. I try to get as much on this podcast stuff that can be verified and checked, and I tried to get as little stuff. My word against his word. He said.
Right.
You know, obviously some of that slipped in because we're talking about private conversations, and you know, if Gregory denies the things that I said that he said, well,
take it for what it's worth.
You've got my side of the story. You've got his side of the story. But the other stuff can be verified, can be researched. So please, anybody who has the inclination, please, you know, verify them.
And I'll post those on the website then as well. You're going to send me those
I will email you that
good
stuff.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, John. I know that you've gone on a little bit here longer than some of the others, but a lot of really good points, I think, everyone. So it was very clear, and so we'll kind of see how this continues to shake out.
Great. Thank you, Scott.
All right.
Thank you, Scott. And please talk to other people.
I will indeed. And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was John Lovick. This is Scotty out.
Thank you again, John, for taking the time to speak with us here on The Magic Word and to give your testimony and to present your side of the story. We now go from the west coast of Los Angeles all the way to the east coast in Long Island, New York, where we get to talk with Seth Kramer. Unfortunately, due to the blizzard conditions that we had recently on the east coast, this audio is rather of poor quality, because Seth's internet and his phone lines were down, but we did the best we can, and I think that you will get the point here on this podcast with Seth Kramer. Hello, this is Scott Wells with themagicwordpodcast.com, and I wanted to get on the record Seth Kramer, who was someone who was also mentioned by Gregory Wilson in the recent podcast. Hi there, Seth. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning.
Good morning. And so, again, I just wanted to get your side of the story, I guess, that Greg said that you had a trick, I guess, that you had shown him. Rather, it was reported that you had shown him, but it must not have been as impressive because he doesn't seem to recall seeing this from you, I believe, was how I put it.
Right. Yeah, I guess meeting me was what he calls an insignificant event, as he uses with not only myself, but apparently with many other people as well. Mm-hmm. My story is not quite as involved because I met Greg at the A1 convention in Sacramento way back in 1998, the one and only time that I was there. And I didn't really know him before then. We don't have an extended history together. It was really my one and only meeting with him, you know, at that time, and probably didn't run into him again for several years. At that convention, you know, we did kind of get together in a little session, and I showed him a couple of routines. One of them is my Blank Ambitious card routine called Blank Ambition, and a ring on string routine, which was not really mine, but a move in there was shown to me by a good friend of mine, which I did show him, and also a card vanish that I do. It's called A Cards Vanish, that was published in Apocalypse. So basically, those were the three routines that I recall showing him. I mean, there may have been more, and he has shown me some routines of his. I know he showed me the pitch and ditch and things like that, pit stop or whatever he calls it. But basically, the way that I see this happening, I mean, I don't have a lot in print. My Blank Ambitious card routine was published back in 1986 in a small magazine called Ruminations. That was published by Stephen Schneider, and that's in volume 1, number 5. And then my Instant Cards Vanish was published in volume 8, number 7 in the July 1985 issue of Apocalypse. Now, my meeting with Gregory wasn't until 1998, and that's when I showed him those two routines plus the ring on string routine, which, as I said, was not my routine, but a move that a friend of mine had showed me. And quite interesting enough, a year later in 1999, Gregory's one-man issue of Labyrinth came out. That's a magazine that was published by Stephen Hobbs, and it contains both of the items that I shared with him at the convention. So that's kind of a big coincidence.
Did they have credit to you?
Well, what happened was with the Blank Ambition routine, Gregory came to Steve and said, oh, I have this great routine. You know, this is something I came up with, you know, years ago. I'd like to put in my one-man issue. And Stephen Hobbs, to his credit, said, whoa. You know, I know this is somebody else's routine. This is Seth Kramer's routine. And, you know, we need to call Seth and make sure it's okay with him. I'm sure that if Stephen Hobbs didn't know of my routine, that would have been an uncredited routine. But Stephen did call me and did ask me for permission to publish this. And I did say it was okay at the time, not knowing that, you know, the other Instant Card Vanish was also in that issue in a routine that he calls the Kevlers. So that's basically the history of you know, my involvement with Gregory Wilson.
And as to that ring move, didn't you say also that move was in Greg's Ringmaster that was uncredited?
Yeah, it was. I believe that routine was uncredited in Greg's Ringmaster video, and it wasn't even my move to. You know, it wasn't even my move. It was something that was shared with me. Yeah. So, the Ringmaster routine wasn't even the whole routine. It's a three-phase routine that I do. The middle phase involves a move that was shown to me. And it's not that it's a huge secret, but it's a nice finesse on the routine. And it subsequently found its way onto Gregory Wilson's Ringmaster routine with no credit or maybe even a backhanded credit, as far as I remember. I haven't seen that routine in quite a while, so I don't remember if it was uncredited or a very backhanded credit, as, you know, so often he does, where he says, this is something I've had in my notebooks for years, but, you know, something along those lines. But the timeline that I have is I met Gregory Wilson in 1998. The routines were published in 1999 in his one-man issue of Labyrinth. My routines were published in 1985 and 86, as I explained earlier.
And didn't you say to me in an earlier conversation off air that you had come up with these ideas, I think, when you were like at Tannen's Magic Camp or something when you were a teenager.
Yeah, exactly. These routines were, you know, they were published in 1985 and 1986, but things that I do, the Instant Cards Vanish and the Blank Ambitious Card routine, has been, you know, probably since I'm 15, 16 years old. So it's something I've done, you know, 10 years before it was even published.
Sure. And in fairness, I guess sometimes, of course, there are ideas that people have that are completely, one person does not know that the other, someone else has invented such an idea, and they come up with something, say, hey, this is new, and there can be a simultaneous invention somewhere across the world. But you're saying you don't think that was necessarily the case, because even though he later came back, Craig did, later came back and said, it was so insignificant, I don't remember it. If he had shown it to me, it's possible you're saying that it could have been in his subconscious that he did not remember that, but that was where it came from.
It's possible, but it seems like I'm not the only person who has had this issue. You know, if it were an isolated incident, you know what? You cut people some slack sometimes, but this is incident after incident after incident. And you have the stories piling up. So, you know, I know my story. I know other things that I've heard from other people, from Apollo and Cosmo and from John Lovick and from Rob Zabrecki, you know, those stories that are just piling up. And it's one after the other after the other.
Right.
You know, so what are you supposed to say? I know the history. I know what I remember. I know it's a he said, and but I know the timeline, and I know how long I've been doing that routine, and it's just kind of odd that 1 year after I meet him, these two things wind up in Labyrinth.
And as you have shown, it has chronologically predated him significantly.
You have 10 years.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so, again, I just wanted to kind of get your side of that, since that you are brought into this and talking about that move. And also, the move is not significantly different that he has presented versus what that you had published. Is that correct?
No, not significantly. Maybe the hand is turned a little differently, but basically it's a French drop with a card. I mean, that's basically what it is. And, you know, it was, like I said, it was an apocalypse, 10 years before I met him, and subsequently a year after I meet him, it winds up in his king-size traveler routine in Labyrinth. And I believe he uses it in another spot, too, in a credit card routine somewhere that I vaguely remember seeing somewhere. Also without credit to me, I couldn't put my finger on it in the time that I had to find it, but
right.
It's something that I remember in the back of my mind. And look, it's not rocket science, you know, to figure out to do a French drop with a card. And I actually had a nice ditch with it in the ditch of the cards. It was a multiple card vanish, which with a nice ditch onto the spread packet of cards on the table. Mm-hmm. His was a kind of more of a barehanded vanish, which I've done as well. And he basically just taking the card, the hand with the card, and dropping it to his side instead of ditching the card somewhere. So, you know, the vanish is basically the same. I mean, you know, going a French drop is a French drop is a French drop. Again, is it possible that he came up with that independently? Perhaps, but the chronology just really says otherwise. And like I said, I've been doing that move since forever, since 1980, since before 1985 when it was published. You know, I know what he remembers, but the published record does not lie.
Right. All right. Well, Seth, thank you very much. I just wanted to, again, get your side of it, and I appreciate it for being part of this magic serial, if you will. So, for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Seth Kramer, and this is Scotty out. Thank you, Seth, and thank you, listeners, for putting up with some of the poor quality of the audio that we had there. We did have a little bit of difficulty trying to put that whole thing together, and it took a little bit of editing in order to try to tighten up some of those dead spots that we had. Anyhow, earlier in this podcast, I had mentioned that there were several who had reached out and wanted to talk with me and give their perspectives and their stories that they had with Greg. And there were some who had shared stories with me but said they would prefer to remain silent for a variety of reasons. They told me the stories, but just said that they would rather that I not say anything publicly nor mention their names. I did, however, get an email from Jamie Ian Swiss, because I believe his name had been brought into this discussion on one of the podcasts as well, and he said that I may read this in email in its entirety. And he says, "Hello, Scott. While I have not taken the time to listen to the program, I have been told secondhand that Mr. Wilson claims that I have refused to shake his hand. Not only can I attest to the truth of this statement, but if anything, I take it as a point of pride. I am pleased, however, to shake the hands of a man like John Lovick, Apollo Robbins, Cosmo Solano, and Brent Garris, all of whom I not only respect as men of integrity, but whom I am proud to call my colleagues and friends. Beyond that, while I thank you for the invitation, I must decline, since science has yet to invent a technology that is capable of measuring the amount of f**ks I give about what the likes of Gregory Wilson thinks of me. Well, there you have a statement from Jamie and Swiss. Gregory Wilson has told me that he wanted to respond to the comments that have been made and says that once that everyone has recorded and been on the record, it will be easier for him to pick apart the lies, as he calls them, and he can provide the truth that will exonerate him from all of the accusations that have been made. So I hope to record that conversation with Greg in the very near future and present that podcast to you here on The Magic Word. Thanks again to our sponsor, ManageGigs.com, who helps bring you this podcast. And for those of you who would like to become a friend of The Magic Word, please consider making a financial pledge by going to the tab where it says Join the Friends of The Magic Word and learn more about how that you can help keep this podcast on the air. So, until next time, stay well, get booked, and give credit where credit is deserved. This is Scotty out.